Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to the Aging in Place podcast for any stage in life. I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. I'm here today with David Trulli. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
I'm excited to talk with you today. I had to ask you in which state or country you were because I think you travel a bit.
Yes, these days I'm living in Austin, Texas. I still go back and forth to Mexico quite often. That's where I'd lived previously. I moved here to Austin about four years ago with my family, mm-hmm. but I've been down in Mexico for about 10 years that I spent time down there and some previous time there that I did my research down there.
Well, I would love, these are the kind of fun interviews that I think are absolutely fascinating. I would love to spend a few minutes talking a little bit about your background, what you've done, and how you've reinvented yourself.
Well.
How's that? I know.
That's a lot. I'll try to condense it as best I can.
Oh, don't. We've got lots of time. That's what we're here for.
Great. Well, I've actually always been a big traveler since I was a kid. I was raised in Saudi Arabia, Aramco Oil Company. My father worked for them. And so we spent time over there. So I feel like in a lot of ways, for all of my life, I've done a lot of traveling. I've always been interested in places. My first passion was actually music. And I was a musician for about 15 years on the road. I owned a nightclub in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina.
What did you own? Because I am actually in Hilton Head, even though this is national.
Yes, I owned a place. I was a co-owner with some partners of mine, a uh-huh. place called the Old Post Office Emporium. And the Old Post Office
OPO.
It was a very famous, maybe infamous place. In the early 80s up through about the early mid-90s, we were the first kind of national venue. We had people ranging from, Buddy Rich's Orchestra opened up the place for us. But we had everybody from, Blue Oyster Cult to Bonnie Raitt to Cab Calloway to Gordon Lightfoot to, you name it, the 60s, 70s folkies to the rockers. You know, bands that were coming up at that time were like Hootie and the Blowfish, Widespread Panic, Roseanne Cash, Vince Gill. And so that was my upbringing. And I was raised actually my parents came back to the United States, I was raised in Florida. I've always been attracted to.
Where in Florida? Where in Florida?
I was raised in Tampa, Florida for most of school years. And, mm-hmm. I found it to be I've always been intrigued with tourist destinations or destinations that have a certain charm, even back then. And Hilton Head back then was dirt roads. I mean, it was nothing. I mean, I first went to Hilton Head in probably 1978. And mm-hmm. I had a band and we played with the community theater. We did a lot of the music for them when they did things like Grease and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. So I was in the music and the industry. We had a recording studio there. And it was a very interesting community at the time, and I really enjoyed my time there. And I had a band that was traveling at the time called the Truly Dangerous Swamp Band. We were quite big in the college.
Gosh.
Yeah, we were quite big.
Was David Warren, David Wingo?
David, I knew all those guys, David Warren, David Wingo. We were all, I'm trying to think, Chilly Willy was the name of the band that David Warren was in. David Wingo knew him well and still know him. And so I spent a lot of time there, and it was, and in my band, we were playing with a lot of national acts. And at some point in time, I just decided it's time for something different. I enjoyed music, and we had played in front of 20, 30,000 people. We'd done a lot of stuff with our band. We had a couple of fires. We had a fire at my nightclub. We had a fire of our equipment truck on the road one time. And I decided that maybe it's time to try to do something else. And I just, I decided to go back and finish up college, because when I was in college, I went to Tulane University. I went to Peabody College of Music, Berklee College of Music.
Oh, my
but
gosh.
I never really finished anything, because I'd always get ready. I get a project and we take off on the road. So I went back and I finished up my school, and I had a class.
Where'd you finish?
I went and did all my undergraduate, or finished my undergraduate, just had a couple credits at Columbia, University of South Carolina. And and then I continued on and did some classes there at Hilton Head. And they had the little extension college, which is now a much bigger college campus.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And but I went to USC in Columbia, and took an interesting course with a gentleman named John Winberry, who was a geography professor, on Mexico. And I remember when I'd ever had breaks, I'd always go to Mexico. Me and my sound man, we'd always go down to Mexico and rent a car and drive all over the place. And I always had a fascination with that country. And so basically that geography course, I decided then to get a master's. I was doing some journalism. I was doing photography. I had a photography show at one of the galleries there in Hilton Head. And so I was kind of, as you say, reinventing myself. I was trying, just trying out some different things. And then I really reinvented myself. I got married, which was something I never thought I'd do. And I decided to go ahead and get my master's degree. And my wife and I went down to San Cristobal de las Casas in southern Mexico. And I did a piece on my master's thesis was on ethnic tourism among the Lacandon Indians, and looking at
interesting
ecotourism developments, but mainly looking at cultural impacts and these type of things. We spent a few months down there, and we actually were down there during the Zapatista Revolution, which was, we woke up one morning to have the whole town surrounded by Mexican troops as they went into the rainforest. So it really introduced me to kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly of Mexico, and the kind of the ambiguity of life down there, the kind of lawlessness at times, but also the importance of traditions and customs in that country. And then I decided at some point, I taught some classes, and I'd been on stage most of my life, and I found that teaching was not much different than that. And then I decided to go ahead, and my professor said, well, why don't you just get a PhD? Why don't you just go ahead and do that? So I decided to do that. And
piled high and deep.
Yeah.
I know them well.
And so then I decided, I'd heard when I was down in San Cristobal, of a little lake called Lake Chapala up in Jalisco, where there are a lot of gringos living around the lake. Gringos being expats living around the lake.
Okay.
And I decided, well, ecotourism, everybody's doing dissertations on that. And I said, well, this would be interesting to do. So my wife and I went down there, and I decided to do my research down there. We went down there in 1997. And during that time, we really fell in love with the place. And it reminded me a lot of other places I've been, small, even like Hilton Head, that it started out as a very small area with certain characteristics, certain charm that made it special and made it unique. And this is a little town that has a long history along the Lake Chapala area. Ajijic, in the little town of Chapala, had a long history of some really interesting people that had visited there. Everybody from Tennessee Williams, Bob Dylan, who else? D.H. Lawrence wrote some of the Plumed Serpent down there. It was a very attractive place for artists and writers. A lot of that had to do with the fact that it has a large lake and a high elevation. So there's a lot of...
Where is it? Where is it exactly?
It's about 30 miles south of Guadalajara, Mexico. So it's in the,
the
central region of Mexico, about 4 hours from the coast, from Puerto Vallarta and Manzanillo and those places. Up in the mountains, it's a mile high, more or less. So it's up in a plateau. Guadalajara is a large plateau region. And then right south of there is an old volcanic valley, and that's where Lake Chapala, the lake is. It's one of the largest lakes at a high altitude. Because of that, evapotranspiration, it attracted also a lot of painters, especially impressionistic painters from France and people following that tradition because of the way it kind of blurred the atmosphere.
So on that note, David, I'm going to interrupt you, and we're going to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to continue. And what we're talking about is the journey of David Truly, and it's a fascinating journey, and it's about geography, and it's about reinvention, and it's about lots of fabulous experiences. So stay with us. We'll be right back here on Aging in Place Podcast. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com. We are back here on Aging in Place Podcast for Any Stage in Life. Once again, we're here with David Truly, and we are talking about the journey of David Truly. I feel like you should be writing a book about your excursions. You talked about your educational passages, if you will. What was your master's and your PhD actually in?
Well, my bachelor's degree was in interdisciplinary studies. And I liked it because I combined journalism with music, with history, and I liked this idea of interdisciplinary study where you borrow from different disciplines. I was fascinated with that because create kind of new paradigms for addressing things and looking at problems. And then geography, though, is where I ended up as a department because geography, by its very nature, is very multidisciplinary. We have medical geographers, physical geographers, cultural geographers, of which I consider myself probably mainly a cultural geographer.
Yep.
And I was really, so my master's and my PhD is in geography. And that's what kind of brought me to this place because I was fascinated to how places evolve because places like Hilton Head, places like St. Augustine Beach, Florida Keys. We used to play there years ago before it was what it is today. You know, it's always interesting, and I talk to my students very often about, you know, can you think in your head about a place you always went with your parents and you have these wonderful memories, and you go back there 10 years later and you go, what happened? Because sometimes
it seems so much bigger. Yeah. Right.
Yes. And some of that is the natural, and some of that is, you know, been the role of tourism and retirement in society. Let's face it, retirement is a relatively new phenomenon in American civilization. Just really started in the 1950s, more or less. And so this whole concept of retirement, not only is a privilege, but almost as most people consider it as a right. I mean, this is something we all expect to have, and not everybody has it anymore. But the point is tourism and retirement intertwine in a lot of ways, although there are a lot of differences between them. And this is what I found myself drawn to, you know, this intertwining between tourism and retirement and how they affect place.
Very interesting. Are you going to ever retire?
I don't know. I feel like my life, I don't know if I've really ever worked a day in my life, so it's kind of hard to
see. Well, no, and I think that's part of what we've discovered in this podcast as we've talked to folks of all different ages, aging in place for any stage in life. I think many of us, at least my age, I'm 66, I don't want to retire. I feel the same way. I don't know that I've worked in my life. I've kind of followed passions and education and dreams and reinvented. I think we baby boomers are carving out a new direction for what it actually means to grow older.
I totally agree with you. I think that I think that we're baby boomers have not only redefined everything that we've been doing, that this generation, but they're redefining it for future generations also.
Absolutely.
And I think the idea of aging, and I think one of the things that brought me to this place, to the Ahiik Lake Chapala area, when I heard about these people that had gone there, and then I started reading books, Dane Chandos and Neil James, who had written books about this place in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And, you know, these are people that were definitely at that time, the eccentric travelers, the bohemians that were kind of going off the grid. And you know, we see these throughout history, whether, Hemingway leaving the United States, jazz musicians going to Paris, hot club to France. And so there's this kind of wonderment in travel and in different locations. And I think, you know, we see this has now become very part of the fabric of our life. And you look at the migration habits of people now. And it used to be, yes, you're very young and then you go to school and most people would get a job, they'd stay close to family, and then they grow up and sometimes they'd never leave. And then over time, right, people went to college and they went to college, they moved in, and then there'd be another migration for a job. They'd get a family. Well, they move from the city maybe to a suburb. And now we have this late migration, this retirement migration phase. So we've seen within the academic research, you know, that the changing migratory habits of people. And it impacts not only the people where they go, but it impacts the place, right? Because the same thing when you have
the economic factors, everything.
The economics and the sociocultural, all of it. I mean, the fact that, for instance, I can tell you when I had my club in Hilton Head, trying to juggle, because, I mean, the island wasn't very big back then. I mean, there were maybe 8,000 people during the wintertime. I mean, there was, you know, and we were trying to stay alive. And so we'd have one weekend, we'd have Wynton Marsalis. A couple weeks later, we'd have a psychedelic band. Like Widespread Panic, or we'd have...
I remember that.
And so we're trying to cater to try to keep it going, you know. And I think as older people move into neighborhoods, their desires, the things they like to do differ greatly. Mm-hmm. And it can have major impacts. There was some studies done in North Carolina that really looked at how it affected communities as older people. They get involved with politics over time, and then they want certain things like maybe more hospitals, more ambulances.
Yeah, better health. Yeah, right.
Better health. Exactly. And then
Lifelong learning.
Lifelong learning. And sometimes that's why we see that sometimes piggyback. We see a lot of retirees go to university areas because universities offer opportunities for lots of cultural events and sporting events, recreational events, life learning events. So these are factors that have really changed the dynamics of where elderly, where seniors and aging people live and the things they're looking for.
Why Austin, Texas for you?
Well, it
fits all the criteria, music, education, diversity.
Well, you have to throw in something else. And that is, I decided, my wife and I at very late stage decided to have kids.
Okay.
And so we see, one of the things is the reason, let me just backtrack just a little bit. When I went to Ahiik for my dissertation, my wife and I, we looked at it and we met some fascinating people there. And I like to talk about it more because I think it's very important to the senior market, what's going on there. But after we left and I went to the university, I was at Central Connecticut State University as a professor. And we came down during my sabbatical. And at that time, we had two children, one about about 18 months old, the other 2.5 years old. My wife and I came down to Mexico, and at the end of my sabbatical, my wife looked at me and said, "You know, Dave, I think you should go back to Connecticut, and I think you should send the money south, just like all the other Mexican men do to their families."
Because, I like it. Yeah.
Well, and we talked about it, and there were two things. One was, yes, it was, most of our family were all in the South, so we were pretty secluded mm-hmm. from our family network in Connecticut. But also, there was a sense of camaraderie and a sense of community that you find among the expats and even the younger ones. And we were certainly younger then compared to the older, the retirees. Here.
Right.
And we met other young families that were down there. And even with the Mexican community, there was such a cohesive community. And that's largely because of the Mexican culture, which a lot of people reminds them of what it used to be like in the United States. Like when I was there, a lot of people said, this is what it used to be in the 50s and the 60s, where neighborhoods, where kids were different.
Fascinating.
And, you know,
well, on this note, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to continue where we left off here with Dave Trulli. We're talking about his journey. Stay with us. We'll be right back here on Age Place Podcast.
For more podcast episodes, links, information, and media inquiries, please visit our website at agingInPlacePodcast.com as we transition through life with the comfort and ease you deserve. Discover how you can create a home that will adapt to you as you journey through life and the changes it will bring. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as our host, Debbie Lines, and her expert guests discuss relevant topics to creating a home for all decades in life. Don't miss our weekly episodes of Aging in Place Podcast for every stage in life.
We are back here on Aging in Place Podcast. We are with David Trulli, and I honestly believe that we could have about three different podcasts and and still never finish chatting, because it's your life is filled with this depth and this richness and breadth. Really fun. And in the break, when David and Henrik and I are trying to figure out what we're going to do for the next segment, like I said, we've got about 16 different ways that we could actually go. And they're all fascinating. And I think really this life journey is pretty incredible and something that is definitely worth telling. We left off with you talking about Austin, and we'll kind of wrap that up quickly so that we can move back into what you're doing today.
Sure. So that movement, when we decided to go to Ahihik, we lived there from that time on, and I actually commuted back and forth to the university for a couple of years, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Back and forth. And then we decided, I gave up my tenured position, and I taught at the Autonoma University in Guadalajara. And I started doing a lot of consulting for developers and people interested in senior development, aging in place. And we also decided to do it because we wanted our kids, we felt like, to raise them bilingual and bicultural would be a gift that we could give them. Mm-hmm. And so we
very
stayed down
so.
There until about 2016, we stayed down there, and we came. Then we decided the kids were getting into high school, so that's what brought us to Austin, Texas. And And for me, it was also, and we'll talk about, because that period of years in Ahihik were really phenomenal, because not only did I was able to kind of continue my studies for my dissertation, but I actually became one of my own study subjects in a lot of ways. And, you know, this became...
Did you really?
Because I kind of was living the life as opposed to just observing it. And mm-hmm. and I think...
Okay.
And if I could, you know, I'd like to say, you know, the dissertation, when in 1997, when I went there and my wife went there, what we discovered is, and the purpose of my dissertation was to really do a kind of a typology or a psychographic...
Yeah.
Geographic profile of the types of people that went to international retirement destinations. At that point, it was a very small amount. And so I talked to people that had been there since the 1950s and 60s. A woman named Enid McDonald, who's one of the first female aviators for the Canadian Air Force. And she, interesting, fascinating people that I met. And you know, you really kind of came, what I walked away with, though, is that these people, number one, excuse me, they had a real grip on openness to culture, to different experiences. And this is the type of people that they were. They were intellectually curious. If they didn't have a PhD or a master, they were unbelievably well-read and self-educated.
Okay.
Writers and authors. A lot of educators that went there. And we found that in my analysis that there were a few things that really spun these groups into four different groups, more or less. One was, the two questions were dissatisfaction with their home country, which really speaks to kind of the true expatriate in the terms of people that are dissatisfied with their country because of political reasons, cultural reasons.
Right.
And yet, and then there's the other question was a question based on how much affinity or appreciation that they had for the Mexican lifestyle. And when we spun those questions around, came up with four different groups. And basically there was this negatively selective group, which are people that are true expatriates that just leave and go away.
Get me the hell out.
And there's positively selected people. And these were the people that wanted something more, that wanted to improve some aspect of life. They didn't have to move, but they found something different that added something to their quality of life. And it wasn't just material things like the cost of living. It was something much deeper than that. It was a sense of culture. It was a sense of identity. And what I discovered, though, down there is I was down there in 97, and 94, 95 is when the NAFTA Trade Act started. And so we just started to see the beginning of NAFTA and the emergence of Walmart and Sam's and those type of things. And what really changed is before that period of time, people couldn't get the luxuries of the United States and Mexico. And all of a sudden they could. And it brought what I call people, the importers, people that import their lifestyle from other parts of the world. And this was major impact in that in Ajijic, because people came down there and expecting to live there because it's lower price cost of living, this great climate. And it's not so different than places like Hilton Head or places like Florida in its early days. People come from different places, and they bring with them their own attitudes and expectations. And while those can be very interesting, they can also be things that kind of very often affect the original charm and characteristics that draw people there in the first place. And we saw this in Ajijic, these importing lifestyle. People I'd see them in the bank at a Mexican bank, and they'd standing in line, they'd say, David, you know, why don't the teller speak English here? And I look at him and I go, well, it could be because it's Mexico. What do you think? But the fact is there's this, you know, as retirees, they've used to retire to like Florida, Arizona, and they just, these expectations. International retirement migration now has become a huge phenomenon. We have massive amounts of people. And one of the big questions is this idea of aging in place. What happens when they stay there? And a lot of the people that I interviewed in 1997 had been down there for 20, 25 years. But most of it's a small amount that adapted without a lot of the niceties of life from the United States.
Okay.
Nowadays, they can pretty much have everything. The internet's down there. You All can right. kind of have anything you want. But it does change the characteristics of the types of people, their expectations about the people that they live with. And what always concerns me about this is just changing the relationship, particularly in a place like that, the relationship between the local Mexicans and the foreign community, which has always been a very symbiotic relationship, where the foreign community always hire them as domestic helpers and send their children to school and do all sorts of things like that.
Is that still the case?
It is still the case, although there were people there that will tell you that a lot of the philanthropic organizations, a lot of the charities, a lot of the people that run them feel like sometimes the people join them not for the right reasons like they used to. They don't always, it's more of just a social gathering. And the respect for the Mexican lifestyle and the Mexican people and their culture maybe sometimes is not quite as high. I think this is something what Ajijic is going through now, and what a lot of destinations are going through, is now as more and more people have found they can stay there. And in the past, most elderly people, when health issues came up, they would return to the United States.
Naturally, they would return, okay.
Because they'd go back to see their families and they'd be with them. But you know, nowadays, because of the high level of divorce in our society, because of a lot of estranged families and people that never had children, the changes with gay couples that never have children. We have a lot of people that now remain there. And this is the same that we're seeing in international retirement destinations around the world. And so for the first we're seeing a demand for senior living and aging in place in these foreign countries, which opens up a whole new can of worms.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's fascinating. If people are interested in knowing more about aging in place in a foreign country, how do they contact you? What are some resources that you can share with us in this last minute?
Well, I have two websites. They're under construction, but they've got material and they can sign up to them and go there. One is davidtruly.com, just like it sounds, D-A-V-I-D-T-R-U-L-Y, like yours truly.com. And the other is seniorlivinginmexico.com. Senior Living in Mexico is a project I started with some other people and that we're remaking right now. And I hope to have a lot of the talks and lectures that I've done for the community in Mexico down there. And any of those will give ways to get in contact me by email or by phone. And as I said, I do a lot of work. I've been doing a lot of work with developers in Mexico, and we're seeing this really demand for people to stay in these places. And, you know, the problem is, whether it's Hilton Head, whether it's Miami Beach, whether it's Ajijic, elderly people and seniors, as they age, they have other needs, expectations. And as we live longer, those expectations and those needs are changing. And so
matching up
with communities is so important. And companies and developers need to take advantage to understand that, as do governments.
Well, you are absolutely fantastic. And I cannot believe how quickly this time went. I really appreciate it. And I hope everyone reaches out to David Truly. You're very user-friendly. You're very, the more that you talk to questions that I have. So hopefully you'll rejoin us again another time for a podcast. So we want to thank you, David Truly, and thank everyone who is listening today on Aging in Place podcast. For any stage in life. Thanks again. Have a great week. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. Clear the way. Have a toddler in a walker or senior parent in your home with an adult walker? You need to rearrange the furniture so there is a clear, wide path through each room. Even if there aren't any need for ambulatory needs, keeping a wide path for everyone will keep your hips, knees, and toes happy. Your bed is upstairs and you just had hip surgery. What do you do? It was an unplanned accident. Now family and friends go into overload to make sure you can go to bed safely. Functionality does not mean a remodel. Functionality might be spontaneous. Like you didn't mean to break your arm at work today, but now you go home and have to learn how to do everything left-handed. So how do I go from clearing the path for walkers to reaching for the dishes with the other hand? Well, it's about preparation. Simplicity, and functionality. If your surroundings are only filled with the things that you need, moving your beds downstairs temporarily could be simply made by rearranging your couch. Who knew?
Wow. Talking to David Truly was really an honor and an experience. We talk about takeaways, and this episode is no different. I think the takeaway is this. Getting older, retiring, or not retiring, aging in place is something that we all need to consider. And something new to think about, aging in place in a foreign country. Please join us as we interviewed David Trulli. It's truly an experience. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Aging in Place podcast is hosted by Debbie Lyons and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place Podcast.